baseball.
This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, the only podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring interviews with coaches and guests from across the country.
Welcome in Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com, Joe Healy of Baseball America, Chris Burke is with the ESPN SEC Network.
Now from Fayetteville, here's your host, Matt Jones.
We are making the turn into the second half of conference play, and the Razorbacks are still in contention. Still in contention for a division and maybe an overall conference championship. Still in contention to be a regional host, maybe even a national seed. This weekend's series against Mississippi State will go a long way toward determining just how high we can set the bar for Arkansas down the home stretch. It's a top 10 matchup. The Bulldogs enter at number 2 nationally. The Razorbacks are number 10. Hello, everyone. I'm Matt Jones. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Today, we will preview the Mississippi State series with Clay Matvick of ESPN SEC Network. He'll be calling the game Thursday out at Baum Walker Stadium, along with Chris Burke on ESPNU. Plus, we'll talk with Teddy Cahill of Baseball America about an important vote in college baseball coming up at the end of the week to vote whether to allow a third paid assistant coach on baseball and softball staffs. We'll also talk to Teddy about other matters in college baseball, like what's the best conference, and he'll give us some insights on Arkansas and Mississippi State. Baseball America has called that their series of the week. Arkansas is coming off a series loss at Vanderbilt last weekend, and depending on your perspective, the series either lowered your expectations or kept them about the same. Yeah, you can get caught up in the scores and how the games played out if you want, but at the end of the day, it comes down to wins and losses. Vanderbilt won the series 2-1, which I think is what most analysts predicted going in. I think it's difficult to say Arkansas hasn't played well, though, over the past week. I thought that 14-12 comeback win on Sunday was probably the team's best win of the year. Game one could have gone either way. Isaiah Campbell, he pitched well, but took the loss in a 3-2 nail biter, 7 2/3 quality innings from Campbell, who became the first Arkansas ace to lose a game in almost 2 years since the Ole Miss series here in 2017 when the Rebels beat Trevor Stephan. Razorbacks have had some struggles in the bullpen, that's true, allowing 24 runs over the final two games of the series, but consider this. Vanderbilt might be the best team in college baseball this year, certainly one of the best teams that I've seen. They have maybe the toughest lineup in college baseball. They're the best fielding team in the SEC, and they have good starting pitching and a pretty strong bullpen, although the bullpen didn't really show up in that Sunday game. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see Vanderbilt hold up a trophy as a national champion at the College World Series later this year. Remember, Vanderbilt was a preseason number one in three polls, and they were number two in the other three, and they have a head coach who knows how to get them to that point in the season, Tim Corbin, one of the best coaches in college baseball. But I think Arkansas fans have to feel good going into this Mississippi State series, especially about the offense. The offense has recorded 38 hits and scored 30 runs over the past two games. That includes a run rule of UAPB, Arkansas Pine Bluff, on Tuesday night in Fayetteville. The Razorbacks are getting really good production, maybe even great production, from Trevor Ezell, Heston Kerstad, and especially Matt Goodhart, who enters this weekend as the number 2 batting average in the Southeastern Conference. And, of course, Casey Martin's beginning to heat up, too. He had a really nice Game 3 at Vanderbilt and hit a home run against UAPB the other day. You see Martin going opposite field and going up the middle more than we've seen in the past, and I think a lot of that goes back to what we talked about with Casey and Nate Thompson last week about him seeing the ball further into the zone and not pulling the ball quite as much. Another bit of good news for Arkansas going into the series against Mississippi State, Jacob Kostyshok will be back for the weekend. That should take some pressure off of the bullpen. Kostyshok, before he started suffering elbow inflammation, was probably the best pitcher in the bullpen, not named Matt Cronin. Kostyshok has been really good for this team this year, and I thought that against Auburn and against Vanderbilt and maybe even in some midweek games, in between, say like against ORU, you could tell that Arkansas was missing Kostyshok. You could tell it at the end of the series against Ole Miss. When you don't have that arm in your bullpen, it just makes it puts so much pressure on pitchers who might not be they may not be ready for, the role that they're being brought in, especially on the weekend. And so now you get Kostyshok back. Maybe that's 3 or 4 innings of good relief that replaces bad relief on the weekend for the Razorbacks. So that's good news for Arkansas. Bad news, Mississippi State's really good, and they come into Fayetteville as maybe the hottest team in the SEC. Mississippi State now 32-6. That's the best record in the SEC following a tight midweek win earlier this week. Let's talk about that series now with Clay Matvick, who, as we said earlier, will call Thursday's 8 o'clock game on ESPNU, along with Chris Burke. Clay, thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm absolutely glad to be with you and appreciate being asked.
Hey, Clay, you know, so you get a big game, top 10 SEC baseball matchup. I know you love baseball. You've been doing this for a number of years. Just how excited do you get for a series like this? Because, you know, even though the SEC West, it's kind of a dogfight right now, this is maybe the series that's going to decide the division.
Yeah, you know, it's you can kind of say that almost every week when you're talking about the SEC West. It's just absolutely great. I'm looking forward to it with Chris Burke. It's going to be a great series, first place on the line in the division, and I think we're kind of getting spoiled in that regard. Lately, every series involving an SEC West team has some kind of a first place implication. And in particular, Thursday night, the game that we're doing in the series should be excellent. Like I said, I'll be with Chris Burke, and we're looking forward to it.
Have you called a game in Fayetteville before?
Oh, many times. Baum Stadium is one of my favorite venues. And, you know, one of the ballparks that really kind of set the bar high for everybody else in the league. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's part of the reason Mississippi State did all the facelifts that they did at Duty Noble. It was to keep up with the Arkansas and the LSUs of the world, because Arkansas did such a great job with their ballpark. You see the Kentuckys and the Mississippi States and what have you following suit, just to try and keep up.
You called Mississippi State's game against Alabama last week. What were some of your thoughts as you watched them play? Because there are some people who say Mississippi State is the best team in the league right now.
Well, I know that my partner, Ben McDonald, certainly feels that way. I worked Sunday with him in Starkville, and that's what he said. There really aren't many areas of Mississippi State that you can poke a hole in. They lead the nation in wins with 31 now. I think they're up to 3 in the poll. Mm-hmm. 31-7, best start in team history. Chris Lemonis, without a doubt, inherited a great group. But I don't think we can discount the effect that he's had on that team. He has been playing focused. He has everything kind of coming together. The pitching has been outstanding. And Scott Foxhall, who is the new pitching coach at Mississippi State, has done a really good job. They've won 6 in a row coming into this series, and you know, coming off the sweep of Alabama, they outscored the Tide 28-4 on the weekend. Now, granted, Alabama's rebuilding. Brad Bohannon's going to get that thing turned around at Alabama, but they're not where they want to be for sure. With that said, they outscored an SEC opponent 28-4 in 3 conference games. That's really something.
Mm-hmm. What about this pitching matchup you guys are going to get to see? It's Ethan Small against Isaiah Campbell, a couple of redshirt juniors. You don't see that a whole lot. And you know what I think is kind of interesting too about this, Clay, is that both were coached by Wes Johnson at one point.
Yeah, how about that? And now he's, of course, pitching coach with the Minnesota Twins. It's something we're certainly going to dig down into, and you know, what similarities we're going to be able to find in how they pitch on Thursday that maybe we can tie back to Wes. But yeah, Campbell and Small, those guys are combined 10-1 right now. Mm. And if you combine their ERAs, it's got to be somewhere right around 2, maybe even under. But Campbell's pitched great, I think. Even better than the 6-1 record indicates, because he pitched well enough to win last Friday in Nashville, and Arkansas just left too many runners on base. And then Small, I saw him last Friday in Starkville, and it might have been the most dominating pitching outing I've seen in 5 years. Again, Alabama's not where they want to be, but Small dominated. It might not be the best stuff I've seen in the last 5 years, but how he dominated the game was certainly impressive. He struck out 15 of the 18 outs he recorded in his 6 innings. So he comes in feeling very good, looking very good, and Campbell and Small should be a great way to start this series.
What do you think makes Small so good? This has been a pitcher Arkansas struggled against in the past. You know, last year they played down there, and I think he only gave up one run in six innings, and he seems like in a league of really good pitchers, he really holds his own.
Yeah, I think it's the movement on his pitches. I think he keeps everybody off balance. And, you know, I think we've seen it on the pitching ninja and what have you. Some of the late overlays that we've seen on Ethan Small is that the ball comes out in the same place no matter what it is, fastball, changeup, slider. Mm-hmm. It comes out exactly the same, and hitters just don't know what to expect. He's very good at keeping hitters on their toes, and that's going to be the challenge for Arkansas. You know, Arkansas can really hit. I mean, we know that. For them, I think this series is going to come down to pitching because they've been able to count on Campbell for a win in the opener. But after that, it's been a little scary. So I think that's what it's essentially going to come down to. Because offensively, everything seems to be clicking again for Arkansas with the 22 runs in the last two games, and avoiding the sweep at Vanderbilt last Sunday mm-hmm. was huge. You know, on the road, you got to avoid sweeps, and they did that by scoring 14, and then they blew out Pine Bluff here. So the offense looks good. With that said, how are they going to be against Ethan Small? We'll find out on Thursday.
Yeah, 38 hits the last two games for Arkansas, too. You know, I had Chris Burke on here last week talking about the Vanderbilt series. He called two of those games. And, you know, he kind of reiterated what I've heard from a lot of national people throughout the year, that they've been surprised how Arkansas has been able to reload and, you know, kind of have themselves in position to potentially even be a regional host again. I just wonder about, you know, what are your thoughts in that regard?
Well, Casey Martin, of course, you know, he had the big year last year, hit .345, and now really starting to come on again. I mean, his average is up close to .290, and, you know, wouldn't shock me if by the end of the weekend he's up over .300. I mean, because his bat has certainly heated up. The grad transfer, Trevor Ezell, what a polished switch hitter he is, and now his average is up over .300. He's been a great addition. Matt Goodhart, the JUCO transfer, he's hitting over .400. I mean, what a great story that is to plug him in and get that kind of production. And then, of course, they returned Fletcher and Kerstad, and those were two big pieces from last year's College World Series run. So they've been hitting well all year, and you combine those two guys with the three that I talked about, and you've got a devastating offense. But again, I think they're going to be challenged because Mississippi State not only has Ethan Small, but Peyton Plumlee is a pretty good Saturday starter for him. And then the freshman right-hander, JT Ginn, who I saw on Sunday in Starkville, as you know, he turned down close to $3 million to come to Mississippi State, and I can see why the Dodgers wanted him so bad. I mean, he is amazingly confident on the mound, and he just controlled the game on Sunday. And that was despite the fact he was coming off a little arm soreness. We certainly didn't see any lagging effects of the arm soreness on Sunday. He was just absolutely dominant. And for a freshman, it's very impressive.
I think all eyes this weekend, Clay, will be on Jake Mangum chasing the SEC hits record. What is he, 8 shy, I think, of that record going into the weekend. Just kind of what are your thoughts on him and maybe the career that he's had? And he's not the only one chasing. I know Antoine DePlantis at LSU is going after that record too. Kind of rare to see two fourth-year players, you know, like that in college baseball.
Yeah, Mangum has had quite a career. You know, he originally committed to Alabama, where his dad, John, was a great defensive back for the Tide, and then went on to play in the NFL. But, you know, ultimately changed his mind and decided that Mississippi State was going to be a better fit. And, man, did it work out well for everybody involved. I mean, he has been an absolute star. He's hit ever since he got on campus down at Starkville. And I actually think – I think he's 7 away. I think he picked up another one last night.
Okay.
So, I mean, there is a good chance if he gets hot this weekend, I mean, that record could fall in Fayetteville. I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, 7 hits in a weekend is quite a weekend, so we'll see. But there is no doubt that he is a gamer. he has an engine that is always revving, and he doesn't know how to downshift, as far as I can tell. I mean, he plays one speed, and he's one of the best hitters that this league has ever seen. Just a clean, pure hitter. All of his tools, whether they translate to the major league level at some point, I think we're going to have to wait and see. But for sure, he has proven to be one of the best college hitters of all time.
Mangum had a big series when he came here to Fayetteville a couple of years ago. He's had some damage against the Razorbacks in the past. Clay, are you surprised by anything you've seen in the SEC this year, baseball wise? Seems like maybe Florida falling off has been a little bit of a surprise.
Florida's slow start. Kevin O'Sullivan's regrouping there a little bit. It seems to me. Tennessee has played better than I think a lot of people thought that they would in year two of that coaching regime. And everybody in Arkansas remembers Coach Vitello.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's doing a terrific job. The pitching has been outstanding for the Vols. What do they lead the nation with 8 shutouts?
I think so.
Yeah. That, I think, is the story. Kentucky is really falling off. They're not going to factor, it wouldn't seem at this point, to even get to the SEC tournament. But the SEC West, just how dominant it is. I don't know that that's a surprise, because we expected it to be maybe the best division in college baseball, but how from top to bottom, with the exception of Alabama, how dominant this division is and how good the baseball is. Pac-12's having a great year, but the SEC West, in my opinion, is going to produce the national champion, as it feels to me right now. The Pac-12 could have proven me wrong, but it feels like it's going to come out of this division.
You think it'll come out of the West? What about Vanderbilt? That seems like a team, as I was watching them play last week, maybe the best lineup in the league and best fielding team in the league, and it seems like their pitching is pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see him yet. I'm going to see him on the weekend. Berkey and I are going to go to Tuscaloosa and do the game on Saturday. So it'll be my first time to see Vanderbilt in person. J.J. Blade is quite a story. Just a great offensive power. Maybe the candidate right now for SEC Player of the Year. We'll have to wait and see how that plays out over the second half. But at the halfway point, certainly Vanderbilt's going to have a chance. I say that just because we're at the halfway point of the SEC season. People like predictions. I mean, who knows who's going to win it all? But the SEC West, in my opinion, is the deepest, strongest division. And Arkansas is right in the thick of it. I mean, they come into the weekend with Mississippi State, a full game behind Mississippi State. But they've got them on their home field for 3 games. So they've got to like where they sit right now going into the second half.
Clay, we'll get you out of here on this. The big story in college baseball this week is the vote on the third paid assistant coach, and we'll talk with Ted Cahill of Baseball America a little bit more about that later in the show. But your thoughts on that? I think the climate is that it's not going to pass. Is that good or bad for college baseball?
Well, if you ask Chris Burke and Kyle Peterson and Ben McDonald and some of my cohorts, they think it's bad. I mean, they think that. Why wouldn't you bring an extra coach on to teach these young men? And baseball's so hamstrung the way it is, just the roster limit and the number of scholarships and what have you. Just seems like an opportunity that might be going by the boards for baseball to add another instructor and help these kids develop. And I know that. My colleagues are disappointed in that. It looks like a couple of weeks in particular are going to stand in the way of this happening. But, I still think that down the line at some point they will approve another coach. I think it's just the way it's trending that they're at some point going to have to. And Ben McDonald even thinks that at some point they're going to expand the rosters that they're going to have to, because these Sunday games where they're, just out of pitching – is really starting to be problematic. And if pace of play and competitive balance and things are really a concern, then maybe they need to consider expanding the rosters a little bit to give teams a chance to have enough pitchers on the last game of the weekend.
Well, Clay, we look forward to seeing you this weekend. Put on an extra pot of coffee.
Yeah.
It's going to be a late one tomorrow night in Fayetteville.
Yeah.
8 o'clock first pitch.
It's going to be fantastic. It is a late start, but it's going to be a great weekend, and hopefully my voice is back for Thursday night. I've been kind of battling the cold here the last couple of days, but hopefully I'll come out of it.
Well, we appreciate you toughing through it and talking to us today.
You right. Bet. Look forward to seeing you.
All right. Have a good one, Clay. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. Clay Matvick of ESPN. When we come back, a new segment on our show, Fair or Foul. We'll be back in a moment on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now it's time for Fair or Foul.
New game we'll play every week is Fair or Foul. Matt Jones with Scotty Bordelon, who works for us at WholeHogSports.com. Scotty, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing fine. Hey, so Fair or Foul, what we'll do is we'll read some questions, and we'll say whether or not it's fair, which means we agree with it, or it's foul and we disagree. You ready to go?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's go. First one, fair or foul, playing in-state schools is bad for the Razorbacks?
Yeah, I'm going to go foul on this one. I think Arkansas finally playing some of these in-state schools like UALR and UAPB, I think it can be good for both schools. Like, for Arkansas, it can kind of fill one of those midweek slots where maybe scheduling can kind of be an issue for some teams. And, you know, playing an in-state school travel is not that difficult, I guess. But I finally went to a baseball game this year on Tuesday and watched the UAPB game. And it was honestly kind of cool to see, you know, some of the UAPB fans there kind of supporting their team. And just it's kind of neat just to kind of see, I guess, some other baseball teams in the state that, you know, we don't really see UAPB a whole lot or UALR a whole lot. So I think just kind of seeing some of the other schools and some of the other teams in the state was pretty neat. And, you know, it fills a need for Arkansas too, as far as scheduling goes. I think it's foul. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah, I think it's foul too. You look around the SEC and every other team in the league plays in-state competition and they lose to in-state competition. I wrote about that at WholeHogSports.com this week, is that 10 of the 14 teams in the SEC this year have lost to non-power teams from within their state. That includes LSU and Florida. Both of those teams have lost four apiece. LSU's lost to Northwestern State, Louisiana Lafayette, Southern, McNeese State. Florida's lost to North Florida, South Florida, Central Florida, and they split a series with Florida Gulf Coast. This happens across the SEC. So, you know, losing a game to UALR or winning a game over UAPB, yeah, it might have, you know, it might give you a little bit of a hit to your RPI or your overall strength of schedule, but in
right.
a 56 game regular season, it's very minuscule, you know, the effect that it has on your schedule. So I think that's foul. I think it's good for the Razorbacks to play those teams. I think it'd be good for Arkansas to expand that on to play in the rest of the Division I teams in the state, UCA and Arkansas State. You know, you look at that in-system rule that Arkansas has in place. A lot of the people in Jonesboro and Conway, many of whom are supporters of the Razorbacks, you know, who support two teams or maybe even more than two teams, you know, they see that as a cop-out because UALR plays, of course, they play Arkansas State during the conference, but they play UCA, and UAPB will play UCA, and they'll play Arkansas State. And so I think it'd be good for Arkansas to go ahead and rip off the Band-Aid and play everybody from in the state, and I think that'd be fine in every sport. I know that might have caused a few of our people to maybe fall over, but I don't think there's anything wrong with the Razorbacks playing. What we got next?
Yeah, I was getting like even add to that first question, like the fact that Arkansas lost to UALR like in the first game, I think that might, you know, build some anticipation for maybe like a rematch. I don't know, maybe if a lot of people are kind of follow that line of thinking, but that's just kind of a thought I had. The second question was, Arkansas would be a national seed if the season ended today, fair or foul?
I'm going to go with foul. And, you know, I know there's a lot of projections out there that have Arkansas as a national seed. Baseball America is one of them, and we'll talk with Teddy Cahill about that here a little bit later on the podcast. I just don't know that Arkansas has enough of those quadrant one wins to be a national seed right now. Now, that could certainly change this weekend with Mississippi State coming to town. You know, if Arkansas were to win that series, then I might change my tune on that. And they've got a lot of chances to, you know, increase their RPI. And their RPI is really good. I think it's sixth going into this series against Mississippi State. But, you know, really, Scotty, when you look at their season, Missouri, those are good wins, but they're not quadrant one wins right now. And so you look at the Razorback season, Auburn is right there kind of on the fringe of being quadrant one wins. The win over Vanderbilt on Sunday was certainly Arkansas's best of the season. But past that, I just don't know that they have enough of those quadrant one wins like they did last year when they beat Texas and they beat Texas Tech and they beat, you know, all these great teams within the SEC, even the national seeds who Arkansas lost the series to on the road, the win, you know, say at Florida or at Georgia or at Ole Miss, that certainly helped Arkansas at the end of the season. I just don't know that they have that right now, but they certainly, you know, they have the chance to do that over the final month of the year.
Yeah, for sure. I'm kind of leaning foul as of right now, too. Like, I think they're one of the 16 best teams in the country, or they will be by the end of the year. But, like, right now, I'm kind of not sure. Kind of like you alluded to, I think, like, maybe if they would have, you know, if they could have won two out of three games against Ole Miss instead of losing the final two, and then going to UL, or playing UALR and losing that, and then kind of blowing a lead at Auburn, you know, I think that kind of may have given some – giving some pause to this team about, you know, maybe being a national seed. But, you know, I read Dave Van Horn said last night that Jacob Kosciuszko's going to be back for the Mississippi State series. So maybe you're shoring up some things in the bullpen. I know that just watching from afar, kind of following from afar, like I feel like that's kind of been one of the big issues for the team. But getting him back, I think, would be big. And, you know, I think they've got plenty of offense, like outside of the staples, like Kerstad and Casey Martin, of Trevor Ezell's playing really well. I was impressed with him last night. He went opposite field, you know, for a triple to open the game and had another opposite field hit. He's really impressed me. But right now, I'd probably lean foul as of right now. But, I expect this team to be much better, you know, later in the year.
Yeah, and Arkansas, they've got a really favorable schedule down the stretch. They get Mississippi State, Tennessee, and LSU all at Baumwalker Stadium in the next 4 weeks. Arkansas 75-16 at home since the start of the 2017 season. They've been a really tough team to beat here in Fayetteville, and I think they definitely have a chance to be a regional host, but whether or not they're a national seed, we'll see. Fair or foul, Scotty, failing to pass the third assistant coach proposal this week will be bad for college baseball.
Yeah, this one I kind of went back and forth on, and we talked about it a little earlier. You know, I'm going to say fair just because I think a lot of college baseball is just about, like, especially as far as coaches go, is player development and getting guys ready to play. And, you know, I think not that the unpaid volunteer coaches don't do a good job, because they want to advance and they want to advance in their field and obviously get other jobs. So I think if you allow one of those volunteer coaches to become a paid assistant, I think it maybe gives them a little bit more incentive to be better, maybe more thorough at their jobs. And then I think on the other hand, you know, those assistant coaches, like if he's paid full-time assistant coach, like he can go out and recruit too. And you obviously want to get the best kids you can on your roster. You know, help you win some games. So that would, I guess, be my reason for the third assistant.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's foul, that it would be bad for the game. And what I think it's bad for are the coaching pool, for the coaches who really want to get their feet wet and get a job within college baseball. You know, I had a friend few years ago who was a volunteer coach, and it was such a tough lifestyle for them and their family. And it wasn't so much the money, you know, I mean, they can work camps and, you know, they're making 60, 70, sure, probably $80,000 a year working those camps. And so they're able to be compensated for it, but what they're not able to have is, you know, they're not able to have benefits. They're not able to have retirement funds. And, you know, and then also, and then there's that fact that, you know, you can only be a volunteer coach for so long. Typically, you know, I know at Arkansas, the volunteer coaches sign 2-year commitments, but of course they can get out of that. Say like Josh Elander got an assistant coaching job at Tennessee a couple of years ago, or Craig Perry last year was hired as an assistant coach down at Abilene Christian. I think it's bad for the coaches who are trying to get into the game. And I think what you're going to see are fewer coaches maybe trying to coach college baseball, or at least college baseball at a high level. And I think that's what hurts the game. You know, I don't know that it really affects the product on the field, because essentially what's going to happen is that you have two options. Number one, if this passes, you have two options. Number one, you can take the volunteer coach designate and make that an assistant coach. Or if you don't want to hire a third assistant coach, and, you know, there are some teams, say like UAPB, who came in here this week, they only have 5 scholarship players. They're not going to be able to afford a third assistant baseball coach.
Right,
you can continue
right
to have a volunteer coach. So I don't know that it changes the game so much. I think it really hurts the families, you know, of the people who want to get into the coaching profession. And, you know, we'll see if it passes. I kind of have my doubts that it will. But I think it's something that we'll continue to see pushed, because people want to help these families out who want to get into college baseball.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, following Kendall Rogers on Twitter the last couple of days has been really interesting. Just kind of, you know, he's been reaching out to ADs saying which way that they're going to vote.
He's been putting them on blast.
Yeah, he really has. That's been kind of interesting to follow. The last question, focusing on two sports has had a negative impact on Connor Dolan's baseball season.
Well, I think that's probably fair, with this caveat. I think Connor Nolan ought to be able to do whatever the heck he wants. If he wants to play two sports,
right,
you know, he should certainly be able to do that. I think it's fair, though, from this standpoint, Scotty, is that every other football player on the roster and every other baseball player on the roster, they're having the off season to be able to kind of hone their craft and you know, develop themselves in that sport. And you're not seeing Connor really get the chance to do that playing either football or baseball. He went through a few spring practices in football this year, but not a whole lot. Of course, he didn't play in the spring game because Arkansas was at Auburn. But I think it certainly has affected him. I should say I would be surprised if it hasn't affected him
sure,
you know, this season from a baseball standpoint. Number one, because he didn't get to go through the off season, through the fall practice with the baseball team. But number two, you think about a 19-year-old out of the house for the first time and on his own. He's got the, you know, the pressure coming from the football coaches, and maybe the pressure coming from the baseball coaches, and then you're trying to juggle all the other things, you know, academics, 15 hours of class, and these other things that come with, you know, being an athlete in college. And so I would be very surprised if that's not having an effect on him, maybe mentally more than mechanically, because, you know, it seems like he pitched pretty well, and I know the competition was different. He pitched pretty well before spring football practice started, and then about that time that spring football practice started, you know, he's throwing two different balls, and I'm sure his arm's getting a little sore. It mm-hmm. hadn't seemed like he's the same pitcher. Some of those off-speed pitches haven't had the same bite to him over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm kind of leaning towards fair, too, and I remember the first time Connor got brought in for football interviews after one of the days of spring practice, and, you know, he's bouncing around from football and to baseball. And I think Tom Murphy asked him, so it's like, so you're bouncing around from football to baseball. And like, when do you have time to study? And Connor's like, you know, that's a good question. Like, he doesn't have a whole lot of time just because he's focusing so much of it on those two sports. And, you know, I was asked last week on a radio show if he'd played his last down of football, just considering that he's, you know, he started some SEC series on the weekend, which is kind of rare, I guess, for a freshman. But I said no, because the kid's, he's super competitive and he wants to be, I think ideally, I think he'd like to be an SEC weekend starter and also be a starting quarterback. on a football team. So I kind of said no on that because he'd ideally like to have the best of both worlds, I think. But I think his future is ultimately in baseball. And I think at some point, you know, I think he's going to have to pick one and run with it. And I think that's ultimately going to be baseball.
Yeah, I think we all agree that baseball is probably, you know, where Connor has the most pro potential. And you do wonder right. about, you know, his future with the football team, not only because of, you know, the returning quarterbacks who got to go through spring practice, you know, this year, but also the quarterbacks they brought in, Ben Hicks and Nick Starkle.
Yeah, Nick Starkle, too. Yeah,
this semester. Yeah, so. Well, we'll see what happens with Connor Nolan. Scotty, it's been fun. Appreciate your help.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Matt.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Teddy Cahill from Baseball America. We'll talk quite a bit about this third assistant coach proposal. We'll also get Teddy's thoughts on what are the best conferences in college baseball, and he'll tell us some about Mississippi State in this big series this weekend in Fayetteville. More in a moment on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app, presented by Absolute Heat and Air. Check out the all-new Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home, and take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app is presented by Absolute Heat and Air. For the absolute best service, trust Absolute Heat and Air.
I've actually been told by a couple of ministers in the North the only reason they're against it is because the SEC is proposing it, which is absolute. I mean, honestly, it is a joke. Yeah. I mean, I look at everything equally with all these conferences, but I do hold to kind of one idea here, and that is if the SEC is trying to do something in baseball, I support it because chances are probably really good that it's something that's going to be good for the sport.
That was Kendall Rogers of D1Baseball.com on our podcast a few weeks ago talking about this vote that's coming up later this week on whether or not to allow a third baseball assistant coach, not only in baseball, but also a third assistant coach in softball. We bring in Teddy Cahill now of Baseball America. He's their national college baseball reporter. Teddy, like Kendall, has been following this story for several months. And now we're right up against it as the vote is expected to be finalized on Friday. Teddy, we appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely. Always a good time to talk college baseball.
So, Teddy, obviously this week's a big week for college baseball. The Division I Council votes Friday on the proposal to potentially add a third assistant coach in baseball and softball. It's such a confusing, from what I've read, it seems like such a confusing, you know, process to where certain conferences' votes count for more than other conferences, and you have athletes involved in voting. Can you explain what that voting process will look like?
Yeah, so I guess while they're doing these their council meetings, they vote on these proposals, and they have, I guess, they input their vote, but then they can still change it for a couple of days. So they might be voting, you know, earlier in the week, but it doesn't become final until Friday. And okay. So each conference is represented there. There are a couple of student athletes on the council, and their votes count for, you know, depending on what you're representing, your vote counts a little differently. The Power Five schools count four times as much as a school or as a conference that doesn't sponsor football, and then the Group of Five schools count double that. Double what a non-football playing conference would count, and then the student athletes are the equal to a non-football playing conference. So I guess one way to think of that is that the baseline is your vote is one, and then if you're in Group of Five, your vote is two, and then if you're in the Power Five, your vote is four. So it's there's a lot of power to the Power Five, but there are also there are 32 conferences, mm-hmm. So there are a lot of votes outside the Power Five as well.
So what's kind of the magic number? If the vote gets to 31 or 32, I mean, does that mean that it's passed?
Yeah, I believe there are 60 points, if we want to think of it that way, okay. Possible on any one measure, and so you just need to pass it by, you know, a majority. So it just has to get to 31.
Okay.
The path to 31 is it's not easy though, you know, because if you can't get the Power Five support,
yeah.
Because if you don't have that, then you kind of have to clean up everywhere else, and obviously that's difficult.
So, you know, throughout this whole process, I guess at first there was thought that, you know, it probably isn't going to pass, and then they put softball as kind of an addendum onto it. Maybe it would pass. It seems like it's gone back and forth. Where do you think we are right now as we're, you know, a couple of days away?
I believe we are at it's not looking good at all. The reporting right now is that there are three Power Five school conferences that are voting no. And I find it very hard to believe that they have the votes among the smaller conferences to overcome the fact that three Power Five schools or three Power Five conferences are going to say no.
You know, two of those Power Fives are the Big 12 and the ACC conferences that, you know, especially in the ACC's case, you know, really support baseball quite well. And you know, they're known for their baseball programs. Does it surprise you to see those conferences, you know, going against what, say, like the SEC and the Pac-12 are planning on voting yes?
It doesn't. From the time this proposal came out, I was hearing rumblings that some ACC schools especially were you know, having some trepidation about this. And, you know, I think right now the way the environment in the NCAA is, if your legislation doesn't directly benefit student athletes in a clear and obvious way, save money or benefit football, like I just don't know how well, like what your legislation really has, what kind of chances it really has, if it's going to cost any sort of significant money. Like last year, baseball was trying to get four fall games passed and it wound up getting two passed. You know, and that's just asking permission to play fall games. Mm-hmm. And there were a bunch of restrictions on it. So it wasn't going to be like Arkansas flying to California. That was never going to be the thing. And they couldn't even get what they wanted there. They wound up with half of what they wanted. So that's the environment they're working in. And it's not one that's conducive to this kind of proposal, I don't think.
You know, the big argument, Teddy, I think has been the player to coach ratio, that it's what, 12-1 right now. And it would shrink if they were able to get a third full-time assistant coach. I mean, does that not move the needle, do you think, for athletic directors?
Clearly it's not. And I also don't know that it should be necessarily, because the thing was, I find that ratio to be disingenuous. Because they're not adding a coach to the coaching staff. All they're doing is providing salary and benefits to the volunteer coach. So they're not adding any staff members here. They're just bringing that volunteer coach to full time. And I think you're doing a disservice to what volunteer coaches do if you're saying that they don't already work full time. So I don't think that this changes the ratio in any way. And in any event, I don't know that, you know, it ultimately is going to, you know, I don't think it's a great argument to begin with, just based on that, but also what it would allow this coach to do is now go out and on the road and recruit. And I know that there are some athletic directors that were nervous about the idea of just giving another coach recruiting responsibilities, because a lot of schools would probably just end up using that coach on the road constantly. Mm-hmm. I don't think the ratio is a good convincing argument, and it's clear that that seems to have been the main thrust from a lot of people in baseball, from the ABCA, from other people, and it seems that argument has failed to sway athletic directors.
You know, there's been some talk, Teddy, about the conferences that vote no, how this might hurt them, and retaining coaches or retaining assistant coaches. Do you think that possibly could be something that becomes a sticking point down the road?
I don't, because, you know, like, okay, so the Big 12 is going to say they voted no. But if, you know, Texas and Texas Tech are among the schools that are responsible for that vote, mm-hmm. Are we really to think that a coach is going to leave Texas, where you can win a national title, where you have a fantastic stadium and fan support, where you're paid very, very well? Are we really to think that just because their boss said no to this proposal, that somebody is going to leave there? Like, where are they going to go? Are they all, like, the SEC only is allowed so many coaches. Right. The NCAA rules permit them only two paid coaches. Where are these coaches going? if the ACC, Big Ten, and Big 12 all said no, where are you supposed to go? The PAC and SEC only have so many coaching vacancies. So, I find that to be ludicrous, frankly.
If it doesn't pass, what's the next step to try to get this proposal passed? Is it coming back with a proposal that's just baseball by itself, drop softball? Is there something else you can foresee that might give them a path to getting this paid position?
I think they could try that, but at the same time, they were initially under the assumption that they couldn't go it alone, that if they just came at it from a baseball only perspective, that there would then be Title IX concerns and things of that nature. So I suppose they could go back to that. They also added softball a little late in the process, and you've seen some people talk about how they were uncertain of the effects on softball, that they'd studied baseball part, that they weren't as sure about the softball part. So maybe it's a matter of coming back re-educated. I don't quite know where they go from here. This is going to be a pretty significant defeat if it ends up that way. Mm-hmm. And, I think that people in leadership are going to need to really kind of evaluate where they go from here, because, if this fails and, that this was something that they had been expecting was not going to cost a ton of political capital, and it winds up costing all of the political capital, it feels like, that I think that a larger scale evaluation of what should come next is would be required.
Switching gears, Teddy, we're about midway through the conference season, and most of these conferences, you look at your rankings at baseballamerica.com, and it's the top 10 is full of teams from the SEC and from the Pac-12. Which of those conferences do you think is stronger right now, and what do you see in both of those leagues, in particular the SEC?
Yeah, I think when you're looking at those two leagues, they both have really elite teams, mm-hmm. but the SEC is probably more depth. Okay. So the PAC has these three teams in the top five, and then Arizona State also in the top 25, and then it's kind of a drop-off. And there is a middle class in the PAC, but there's a clear delineation. Whereas in the SEC, the delineation really doesn't fall off until you get, through 8, 9 teams in that league. And so I think you're looking at better depth than the SEC, but the PAC can compete with the SEC in terms of high end teams. And, that does a lot of things. For the SEC, just having that depth, it means it's a lot harder, but it's beneficial to everyone ultimately, because, it helps everyone's RPI and it makes things, pretty exciting in the league every single weekend, which is a benefit to the fans. Maybe not the coaches who have to go through that difficult gauntlet, but it makes for an exciting season.
I noticed in your new Field of 64 feature that you still have Arkansas as a regional host. What do you guys like about the Razorbacks?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at them right now, they're playing pretty good baseball overall. I think that they've shown that they have, some impressive pieces both offensively and on the mound. And I know some of they're a little banged up on the pitching side, and I think that's shown the last mm-hmm. couple of weeks. But I think they've ground out some big time series wins and done a good job to remain in the mix in the SEC West. They're a little off Mississippi State's pace there, but they have a great opportunity this weekend to with Mississippi State coming to bomb to make up that ground. So, the SEC West is, it's really a cage fight right now. And, I think Arkansas is holding its own. And so that, I think that there's a lot just to be said for that in the SEC West right now.
I know last week you guys had Arkansas as even a possible national seed. Did the series loss at Vanderbilt, did that change anything in that regard?
I don't think so. I mean, in some respects, yeah, it's a missed opportunity, but you're on the road at Vanderbilt and mm-hmm. they managed to win a game there in quite dramatic fashion. So I don't think that really changes that. It's a matter of, every SEC weekend is big, and because when you start lining the host pref order up, it's going to matter where they are in the standings. That's going to be part of it. So, anytime you can get a series win and stay near the top of the standings, it's big. But, any one series right now, it's hard to say that that's, really going to cost you, because there's still plenty of time to make it up. You just have to play well in the second half of the SEC season.
Let's talk a little bit about Mississippi State, Teddy, and you know, obviously there are some people that think that Mississippi State might be the best team in the SEC this year. And when you look at what that program's been through the last 4 years, you know, they're on their fourth head coach now in four seasons. Just what are your thoughts about how they've been able to continue to keep it rolling down there in Starkville? And then maybe your thoughts on the job that Chris Lemonis has done, you know, here in his first season.
Yeah, it really has been impressive just the amount of turnover they've gone through, and yet they've been to a super regional every year for the last three, and this team certainly looks very much capable of extending that streak. And I mean, I think it really speaks to the talent on the field, and you know, kind of everyone involved in that program is responsible for getting that talent there. I mean, it starts with John Cohen, and you know, going back to that, I mean, there's still players that were recruited to play under him that did play under him. Jake Mangan started his career under John Cohen. Wild as that is to think, you know, that it starts there. And, you know, that those kids really play hard. That's another thing that hasn't changed. And, you know, that's again, a credit to the kids as much as anything else, because, you know, ultimately they're the ones that have been the constant. And, you know, so I think that when you look at that senior class, really, especially at Mississippi State, that they deserve a ton of credit for making this run possible, because you know they've been through an awful lot there, and you know that they just keep winning games, and it really is remarkable that they went to Omaha a year ago, considering everything that happened, and you know they're really firing on all cylinders right now. It feels like they're a team that can. Has one of the better offenses in the country. And then on the mound, it's not the deepest pitching staff in the conference, but there are some big time pieces on it. Ethan Small on Friday nights is as tough as anyone in the country right now. And, you know, they have some good experienced pitchers, and JT Ginn, the freshman right-hander, has been very good as well. So, you know, I think right now they're playing well, and, Chris Lemonis has, done a good job to get all the pieces together and get them together quickly and get this, you know, they've really been rolling since opening day.
You mentioned Mangum has kind of been the glue for Mississippi State, and he comes into Fayetteville this weekend with a chance to potentially break the SEC's career hits record. I think he's 8 shy with 344 hits. Just your thoughts on the career he's had and to be such a superstar as a fourth-year college player. You just don't see that very often.
You don't. And it's, I was talking with John Cohen about this when I was in Starkville, and, you know, he was explaining that it's a tough needle to thread. And he's absolutely right, because you have to, you have to go in and hit right away as a freshman. Mm-hmm. And then there has to be something that's keeping you out from the draft, that's insulating you from going to pro ball. And then you can't have any, there can be no sophomore slump, that, you know, you have to keep producing at a remarkably high level. And Jake Mangum is threading that needle. Antoine Duplantis at LSU also is threading that needle. Mm-hmm. And they're really remarkable. And I think it's great for college baseball that Mangum has stuck with college baseball for the last 3 years. He's had a chance to go out in the draft the last 2 years. You know, he was a draft eligible sophomore and decided to come back, and came back last year, obviously, and I think it's fantastic to see. I know SEC fans of other schools are probably sick of seeing him at the top of the Bulldogs lineup, but to have that kind of player in the game has been fantastic, and I think that you know, he's definitely cemented himself a place in Mississippi State history.
Teddy, I'll get you out of here with this. The game, Arkansas, or the series, Arkansas and Mississippi State, I know that's Baseball America's series to watch this week. Just kind of what are some of your expectations for this weekend in Fayetteville, and kind of how do you think the series might go?
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're going to see some premium arms. There's going to be a lot of firepower on the mound, but it's also could be pretty offensive series. I would not be surprised if this turned into a bit of a slugfest, especially after that first game. You know, these are two potent offenses capable of hitting the ball a long way, and you know, I know the ball can fly out there at bomb. So, you know, it might be a little more offensive than most SEC series seem to be, although this year is changing that a little bit, I feel like. So I think it'll be an exciting one. I think it's hard to call. Arkansas is really, really hard to beat and bomb. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a big advantage for them. And if they can take advantage of their the home crowd and the home field, I think that they could have a huge weekend. But at the same time, this is one of the best teams in the SEC they're going to be facing. And I thought Arkansas did a good job against Vanderbilt, but also, I mean, they did come up short. And so we'll see what they have this weekend. But I think that if you're Arkansas, you can go into this feeling pretty good, just knowing that you are at home, and that Baum Stadium is a pretty unfriendly place to play in for opposing for visitors.
Yeah. Well, Teddy, we appreciate your time, and you do a great job over there at Baseball America.
Absolutely. Well, happy to come on and talk some Razorbacks.
All right. Appreciate it. Teddy Cahill from Baseball America. Again, Arkansas and Mississippi State will play this weekend. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. The Thursday game begins at 8 o'clock on ESPNU at Baum Walker Stadium. We'll be back next week to recap the Mississippi State series and look ahead to another big series when Tennessee, a ranked Tennessee team, they haven't been able to say that a whole lot when Arkansas has played Tennessee, they come to town next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It'll be the return of Tony Vitello to Baum Walker Stadium. Until then, hope you'll check out all of our coverage at WholeHogSports.com. I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.